Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, morning, everybody. It is Memorial Day weekend in 2023. We are almost halfway through the year, and as you get older, the years go by much faster than they used to. Usually, there's something I have to get off my chest, which normally starts the show, and, you know, it's not meant to be a monologue, but it tends to take on that life, and that's okay. Today, there's really not a lot that I have say to start the rip. You know, as you know, the show is about politics and current events. So what I've been noticing here lately is Texas is off the chain. You know, as much as we like to think about Florida, Texas is off the chain, or has it always been off the chain? And we're just noticing, again, because we're at this 24-hour news cycle, so we don't get an opportunity, as we once did, to turn our heads and minds away from the goings-ons, because just saw a daggone article right now before going live about a former police chief who was impersonating a Karen police officer being arrested in Texas. Like, I understand the world's changing. I understand times are changing. What I have a tough time understanding on a consistent basis is how socially we have moved so far from where we were. Again, I get it. Times are changing. I understand that. I'm not blind to that. I am one of those movers. I believe in that type of trajectory for life and society. But some things work. And if it works, as the old adage goes, if it ain't broke, don't try to fix it. And I think that sometimes we've stepped too far away from what works and trying so many things that don't, but we are constantly trying to make those things that have proven to not work, work, that we've forgotten that what used to work worked fine. And it really didn't need to be replaced. Just because it was shiny. The new thing was shiny or new. And I'm not against progression. I'm not against innovation. I'm not against changing ideas. I'm not against, hell, changing of the guard. I mean, I think all of those things have their place. But some things that it's to me, it's the equivalency of replacing the fact that, or trying to replace air. Why would we try to do that? What makes that even necessary? It's air. We need that. Stick with some of the things that work. I'm back off of that. That's a lot. Stick with most of the things that work. Some of the things need to go. Some of the things need to change. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if it works and it's not harming, go for it. Stick with it. Ride it out. You never know. Because it has gotten us this far, this long. Shouts out to hip-hop. You know, hip-hop is 50 years old this year, and I will constantly say that throughout the year. I'll especially hit on that next month, because next month is Black Music Month. But shouts out to hip-hop. Who would have thought that it would have lasted this long, and here it is going strong. August is actually the official 50th birthday of hip-hop, so we will constantly talk about, I know I will constantly promote that all year long, because I still am hip-hop, from my toenails to the follicles of the little bit of traces of hair that are on my head. And but that's what's up. You know, school is about to come to a close for a huge portion of the nation. Some of the kids go back to school in August, so they're either transitioning out this week or next week, or they have already transitioned out. The it's Memorial Day weekend, so Myrtle Beach is crowded with bikers, and you have the airline industry warning of potentially the worst season ever, because, you know, folks have been caged in for so long, Boston, because of the coronavirus. They really, really, really want to get out, and things are starting to come together, even in this financial times and woes that a lot of us are going through right now. People have made a way to get away this weekend. So if you're out on the road, if you're in the skies, please be safe. It was my intention to not be home this weekend, but life changed up on that, and I actually decided to stay home this weekend, because I don't know when the memorial service for my father is going to be. As of yet, we're waiting for word from the VA cemetery in order to make that happen. Knowing that I have to be home next weekend for the Capitol Jazz Fest, I didn't want to put that on my shoulders as much. You know, I didn't want to potentially be gone four daggone weeks in a row. Eventually, I like to enjoy the stuff that I pay for, you know, like cable and electricity and water. After that, every now and again, I like to actually enjoy that stuff in my own home. You know what I'm saying? And I'm call me crazy, call me conspiracy theorist, whatever, but I really feel like whatever you, when you're gone from home, all those services are shut off, and they know when you're coming back. So, like, they shut them off to save money on their end, and they know when you're coming back because they track you on your cell phone. So they flip it back on before you get home, and you never know what's going on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so, it doesn't
now,
really work. Because
philosophy.
It doesn't
when
really
I
work.
When I step out on that ledge, you be snatching me right on back.
It was a joke. I was going to say it doesn't really work because, you know, the clocks are set. So that would mean that someone actually infiltrates your home, resets all the clocks and all that type of thing. Yeah, I know it's a little far-fetched, but, you know, I think it's one of those funny things that I keep in my head. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, every now and again, I just like to make sure the lights are still on, the cable still works, and the water's still running. I like to be home, so I decided to shut it down. Plus, the weather's supposed to be horrible this weekend. I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm just going to chill. I was driving, so I was like, yeah, nah. Work went a little different than I thought it was going to go, and I wanted it to go, so I was like, yeah, nah, I'm going to chill. You know what I'm saying? It's my man's 50th birthday on Monday. He was having a celebration today. Shouts out to you, Tone Capone. Happy 50th, bro. Again, I apologize for not being able to make it, but it just ain't going to work. I need to stay stable. I need to do some cleaning up, house, cars, so on and so forth. I need to really get ready to push forward for the rest of the year starting in June. You know, these first 6 months were chaotic between the shopping for the job, interviewing for the job, getting the job, moving for the job, getting acclimated to the job. And now I feel like these next 6 months will be an opportunity for me to reap some of the dividends from, you know, the effort and the energy that I have invested over the past 6 months. So that's how I'm looking at it. You know what I mean? Good morning, Sister Rashi. How are you?
I'm one of those released enslaved instructors that you were mentioning earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing pretty good.
Well, how do you feel about that?
Well, mine is a bit bittersweet, Lee, because not only am I done for the summer, I'm actually the district. Some of it was my fault and some of it was theirs, decided to not renew the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm deciding to sweeten the pot with better credentials and look at other educational venues. I'm actually thinking about going higher up, back to the collegiate level.
Okay.
Because then when you pay to learn,
mm-hmm.
you learn different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And by then, that, you know, most of those brains, most are just prepared to take on knowledge better, you know? But I am completely free, which is something I haven't been in a while. We discussed this maybe about 5 years ago where I was telling you that, on our listeners, that my degrees were not able to translate over to, you know, meaningful, stable work. And so I may have to say, yeah, and still. Because the educational market is so unstable right now, it just seems like I'm having a little issue. But I'm interested in staying with the profession, so I'm going to take me a much-needed mental break, you know, and try to do some, you know, classroom management research. Watch me some videos on how to throw the chair back the right way, where when I fling my stool, I hit him in the top of the head and stuff, you know? And I mean, you know what I'm saying? Because these videos are disturbing, boss. Have you seen some of these videos of the teachers getting maced and rolling around on the floor and hit in the head with chairs?
No, I haven't seen those.
If you haven't seen the video, hey, man, you got to get up on your teacher abuse.
Hold on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If it's done right, though, it winds up in, you know, the students appreciating you for what you gave them and them going on to graduate. You know what I'm saying?
I did hear that.
And that's the beautiful part.
The best thing I can tell you happened to me this year is a gentleman told me, "We be telling you we hate you, Miss Johnson, but it's not real. We just be saying that." And I'm like, "But do you know how often y'all say that?" And they like, "Well, we pretty much just say it when you ask us to do something."
Well,
and
they
I'm
gotta
like,
work.
That's true. There is a strong correlative relationship between my asking for work and you all hating me to death. And so,
is that similar to a man asking a woman Father's Day gift? No, I won't go off on that right now. Rodney Smith is in the building.
Yeah.
Good morning, Rodney. What's going on?
I'm doing good, Brother Lee. Hey, Sister Rashi, what's going on, Brother Barry? Life is good, brother. It's good to be back.
What's up with that? So you were at a week-long graduation. I'm sorry, it was 3 days. I'm sorry, it seemed like a week. A week-long celebration of graduates at Spelman College down there in Hotlanta. How was that?
Lee, it was a beautiful experience. I'll go even further and say that it was a life-altering experience. Mm-hmm. I've been a fan of HBCUs and a supporter, but until you go to that graduation and you see how the students are treated, the ceremony, the pageantry, the tradition, and the support of the alumni, until I actually saw it, whatever appreciation and admiration I had for it was even deeper. And mm-hmm. there was something about my niece is the third generation of going, consecutive generation of attending Spelman, so there's some legacy there. And just the way that they talked to those young sisters. And Lee, they did an art ceremony when people who graduated over 50 years ago literally walked around the field to, you know, from the beginning to this arch where they walk under the arch, and it's like a passing, right? And just imagine somebody who graduated. There was somebody who graduated 70 years ago. Now, of course, her pace was a little slower than everybody else's. But 70 years ago, and
graduated
back,
70 years ago. That means she at least 90.
Came back. There was one woman that was, I think there was one more that might have graduated further back than that. She was like, I think 103 or something like that.
Come
so
on.
that right there was, if I saw nothing else, that would have been amazing by itself. And the support that they get, the encouragement that they get, the more knowledge that they have of who they are and who their people are and who they represent and the pride that goes along with it. And I remember they kept telling them, remember whose name. In other words, you know, like, I don't know about you all, but when I used to leave the house, my mother would always tell me that mm-hmm. I'm representing her and the rest of the family. Don't be out there embarrassing the family. Well, when you go to Spelman, that's what they tell you. You're a Spelman woman. Always, you know, always know who you are. And I just thought, man, that's simple, but that's really powerful. And then they refer to themselves as siblings. I'd never really heard that before, and maybe I'm just haven't been exposed to too many graduations outside of the personal ones. And none of us attended HBCUs, but I had not heard that type of talk before. So previously, I was a fan because I just thought I knew the history of HBCUs. But now that tradition, I see the tradition, and I see how much more it gives them. Because, Lee, when I went there, I was thinking, 3 days? Why are they doing ceremonies for three days? So they had to put their cap and gowns on for each one of those days. I was like, man, I don't even know if I'm going to go to all of those events. I went to every one. I'm thankful that I went to it. And for those of you who are looking for some place to put your money, you want to do the HBCUs, could need your money. To the HBCU graduates, thank you for all that you've done for your alma mater, but feel free to chip in some more chips because they need it. And the rigor. Most of my life I'd been told that HBCUs were somehow less than the white colleges and universities.
Yes, sir.
But while I was there, I got a chance to check out the rigor that's just required for them to get into Spelman. And I was like, oh, wow. Then I started finding out, oh, yeah, I wanted to go to Spelman, but I couldn't make it in. And when I found out, oh, so this is, you know, you go into a real school, you're getting a real education, and just because it has black in it does not mean you're giving up anything. It's just the opposite. You're gaining a whole lot. So parents, if you would sort of rule HBCUs out because you don't think they can get a job, here's something else I found out. Large corporations, actually, for their diversity programs, as long as they're not from Florida or Texas, they go to HBCUs
to recruit.
He good, boy. He'll get that shot in.
Yeah, but
they
go to HBCUs to recruit first. And then if they didn't fill their quota or they need to get that Ivy League credential. Then they'll go to the Ivy League schools and sort of play cleanup and get one or two from there. But they recruit from HBCUs first. So, folks, if you're looking at, oh, my child wouldn't be able to get a job if they went to an HBCU, just the opposite.
You are sadly mistaken. And Deion Sanders is letting that, you know, was trying, you know, not so well, but he was trying to let it be known that it's not just, you know, an intellectual brain trust. It's an athletic brain trust. It's where you can go to get the best of us if you were interested in being able to cherry pick who's the best. You know, W.E.B. Du Bois, talented. Well, it can't be talented 10th now. Black people done got to almost talented 30th. But if you want to be able to pick from us who have signed on for, you know, high academics, intellectual prowess, then that is where you go. You want to go to a historically black college or university, because the predominantly white institution will give you the credentials you're looking for, Mr. Rodney. They will. But they will not infuse a desire and a need for you to do your work on the behalf and for the betterment of the African nation being held within the American nation. They will not. They will not train you for the upcoming struggle. However, if you enroll in the right program, if you join the right unions, if you associate yourself with the correct fraternities and sororities, you can get you a comprehensive education that would allow you to be of use, okay, of use and of service to the greater Pan-Africanist nation. Otherwise, I mean, you go to a PWI so you can get your paper, Mr. Rodney, but you do not go there for, you know, global African liberation. It just won't happen there. But it could happen at Spelman.
Sister Rashi, you are 100%, and that's something that I want to foot stomp on, is when you, I often hear brothers and sisters talking about this African nation, African-American nation within a nation, and education is a part of it. Now, I don't think that you just have to go to get that academic degree. I think that there's some trades that we definitely need to have and should be a part of the mix.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, in general, we do need to have that nation that we keep talking about. We need to fill up those HBCUs and make them not just fill them up. They should be overflowing. They should be adding on to the campus, not reducing it, and it shouldn't be falling apart. Now that's on us. Now, yes, we should get some help from the Fed, because heck, they wouldn't let us read and write. So far as I'm concerned, they owe us that. They owe us that. They're not giving us nothing. It's what they owe us. And we need to make them pay. And we need to make them pay in either bringing trades to those HBCUs if they're not there, or setting up separate trade schools specifically for us. And if there's people always talk about reparation packages and what should be in there, there's another one to consider. They need to expand on our HBCUs. They need to add trades, or we need to build separate. There needs to be separate trade schools for us. And we don't have to wait on the government to pass reparations. Some of this stuff, if we start sending our children there, and once we graduate and we get those nice jobs, and even if you don't have a nice job, you can still send a little bit back, and every little bit counts. And you're right on with the athletics, because it used to be that they recruited out of HBCUs for athletics. Then they figured out, well, if we just offer them scholarships to our schools, and they literally drained the brain trust and the athletic trust from the HBCUs. I believe if you're a top-tier athlete, go to HBCU. Somebody's going to see you. You will still get recruited. Bring that money back to HBCUs, because let's face it, a lot of those endowments and stuff come because of athletes. So
right.
Our athletes play a pivotal role in making sure that there's proper funding in our HBCUs. So, yeah, my granddaughter, the first thing that's coming out of my mouth is, have you looked at Howard or Spelman? First thing.
Mm.
Not Harvard. Not yet. Not Princeton.
Yeah.
Have you looked at Howard or Spelman?
Because that's where my money goes. Now, I don't know where you're going, but that's where my money goes.
Lincoln, both Lincolns, the one in Pennsylvania, the one in Missouri. Clark, Meharry, Howard, Spelman, Morehouse, Fisk, FAMU, Southern University, what do they call it? Come on, help me out. Southern Louisiana.
Which one?
University. It's the one. Come on. It's the Southern. Anyway, get to
the list. Always just call it Southern.
Grambling.
Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Okay, Rashi, this is what I
want y'all to understand is there is a network. We do, just like the predominantly white institutions have their crown jewels of Yale and Harvard and Brown or whatever. We make that same intrinsic mistake, and we have our black crown jewels of Howard and Spelman and Morehouse. But what I want to express to these people is that network that was put down with the pension plans of those Union soldiers, those veterans who turned their money over to the building, to the very bricklaying of these institutions, to the people who had to rally against slaveholders to pull that land back out of their trust, back into the hands of the people who were ready. You cannot overlook this work that was done. Just like we getting the speed up for reparations and not overlooking the work that was done by the field hand under Master's regime, you do not want to let this nation shortchange the educational work that we did when we decided to go brick and mortar and pull our education somewhat out of the church house into its own fundamental academic institution, because, like I said earlier, you cannot wait on your oppressor to educate you out of oppression. You absolutely have to have these institutions that are to give you the knowledge and talents to conceive of a free, future freedom. So, yes, Spelman, yes, Morehouse, but also Pine Bluff, also Fisk, also also those lesser known
North Carolina Central.
Come on, North Carolina Central. Come on.
One of the top 10.
And if you out there and we didn't call your HBCU because we don't have it, you call in. You call in and you get us right, because until we begin to put some respect on the names of those degrees,
yes.
We cannot expect anyone else to broker the cash payout that comes with that respect, right?
Rodney?
Dang, Rashi, you're hitting it now.
She's killing it. Rodney, you keep hampering something that we've talked about before, trade schools. And I agree with you, and I'm more and more agreement with you. Rashi, please comment on this as well. As we transition more and more to AI, because AI is going to take people's jobs. And it's going to happen sooner rather than later, much sooner rather than later. So, you need to be prepared for such, because, and we've talked about this on the show, the future of work, there's a war right now between capitalism or greed and workers, the working class. And no matter what level you're working on, white collar, blue collar, it doesn't freaking matter at this point. Because everybody's trying to save a dollar. Everybody, meaning those at the top, the very top, not the mofo you see, but I'm talking about the mofo that cuts that mofo's check. is trying to save a dollar. A yen, a won, a shilling, a euro, whatever the hell you want to call it, they're trying to save that to make sure that they live well and their people live well. And they will do that literally on the backs of those who work for them. Again, no matter what level you work. So having a trade, something that can only be done with your hands, is important. It's uber important. And I don't think that it should be overlooked. Now, everybody can't do hair. It ain't going to work. There's only but so many
hands.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Somebody needs to learn how to build something. Somebody needs to learn how to take apart something.
Don't be petty.
Somebody needs to learn how to fix something. Somebody needs to learn how to run some wire. Run some wire. Somebody needs to learn how to make a condenser go. You know what I'm saying?
To build a directory interface. Come on, Thomas. Somebody needs to know how to code for data, analytics.
These are the things that we need to turn young folk over to doing and get them to understand there's nothing wrong with going to school. Nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with not going to school. But everybody got to go to work. The former principal of my high school said all the time, be it these young folks go to college or not, everybody going to work. So let's prepare them for that life, no matter what that looks like. If they go to the classroom and then go to it, they go to a trade school and go to it. Everybody eventually is going to work. If some of them walk out here right now being entrepreneurs, they're going to work. Let's prepare them for that reality. And I don't think that we talk about that enough. Again, not kicking aside, not building excuses for people not to further education. It's not what this is about. This is about, as we talked about last week, truly building the community and meeting the needs of that community. Somebody needs to be a plumber. Somebody needs to be an electrician. If you live in a warm climate state, dog, there can never be enough HVAC technicians.
You can say that again.
There can never be enough. You know what I'm saying? And
somebody please turn it off.
Right. Side by side with that goes people who the plumber, because the one and two usually go together. So there can never be enough of them. I was sitting with somebody the other day, and she was saying to me, she was like, yo, I wish I could get young black boys to learn how to be plumbers because there's not enough plumbers. Not enough plumbers. There's not enough plumbers, period. Period. Doesn't care if they're white, Hispanic. There's not enough plumbers, period.
Right. And Joe Biden explained that to us. He said, we need to rebuild this country. I went to go look on what it would take, and what happened is y'all grandpa is dead. He did not appropriately apprentice his job to anyone. Nobody felt compelled to apprentice him and complete the cycle of what's the next one who's going to lay this concrete. And so now when it's time to not just not do, and here's the problem, Lee, they don't want you to lay brick like you used to back in the day. They have this new composite brick. There's a new system on how to do these things, and they need personnel. They need people willing to first understand what was, because there are still jobs that have to be done under the old rubric. But then they need you to be able to be computational. They need you to understand what a schematic is. They need you to understand what proper safety code is. And they need you to come sober. And so what is happening is, between the fact that this is an addicted nation, that we have an education dearth, and that the fact that grandpa is dead and he didn't apprentice himself, now, who's going to put that fucking late asphalt down, bruh? The dude they want to hire now is missing all his grill. He's a subcontractor, and they're hoping, they're crossing their fingers that they have the material, the proper material to keep the contract right. Joe Biden said that our country was falling. He put that on the whole nation, right? And so, historically, Black people have answered that call. That was our migration from the South, Lee. We said, oh, they're going to need somebody to build what that is in New York, the skyscraper, the Empire State Building. Mm-hmm. They're going to need somebody on that concrete job. Let me go hit them up, right? Mm-hmm. And it was so few people that they had to hire Tyrone. But now they're saying they don't have to hire Tyrone. There's like this new machine that 3D prints the shit out. It's a machine that pours old plastic into the frame, and you do not need Tyrone. So what are we going to do?
You don't need fish. Did you see the 3D printed fish that they testing right now? They 3D printed some fish. This y'all.
Did you see them 3D plastic pour the building together? Now
yes,
they put
yes,
the frame,
yes.
They melt the plastic, or it's got some like cement and shit in it or whatever, and they pour old recycled plastic and cement into the frame. They embed it with the, you know, with the, and then they frame it out, and it's the new building. It's
the
green building.
It comes in a big
like pour machine. What I'm saying is, if you don't have computational, if you haven't worked a CAD machine, if you have not looked at a schemata and known what it was talking about, then you might as well go head on and start digging graves at the funeral, because you do not have what they need. They almost done with the dude who do the cement and then brick and then cement and brick. We almost done with him. We're moving on to fixing our infrastructure with material that helps relieve the carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm.
But that's highly technical, Lee. It's so technical that if you don't have your engineering and a mechanical engineer, civil engineer degree, shut up talking to them. You can't even pick up the trash at the site.
But what I see happening, not only that, and thank you for your adding, Rashi, too, though, is the more and more we embed or we lean toward technology to make life greener, I think the more and more we will also lean toward technology to do the work. Meaning, you know, there's in my field, I already know there are warehouses in my field that very few humans are in nowadays. There are literally robots that go, pick the order, pack the order, load the order, and that's it. You have a couple of humans there just to make sure everything is running right. They're there just to watch the robots, basically. You know what I'm saying? And the more and more that these machines get better, the less and less humans you'll need. You'll need less for quality control. You'll need less to actually observe them. Hell, you can make a machine to watch the machine. You know what I'm saying? And these things are the reasons that I know that we need to move toward getting young folks to understand that there are other avenues that they can go into in order to make money that are beneficial to them and the community, and they'll always have work because what they're doing serves a great need that the community has. So don't fear stepping out into something different. Don't fear, you know, saying to yourself or saying to your partner or your homeboys, your homegirls, whomever, your parents, like, yo, I want to be a small engine mechanic. That's what I want to do. I want to be a diesel engine mechanic. That's what I want to do. You know, I want to fix freaking Amtrak is throwing billions and billions of dollars out here to beef up their system. We need kids in the pipeline right now to say, I am willing to go out here and fix locomotives.
Aviation.
That's what
aviation
They're begging for, you know, Roddy knows this. They're begging for jet engine mechanics. We need kids lined up. We need to get kids excited about they're going to fix that engine. They're going to fix that locomotive. They're going to fix that plane. pilots. Everybody and their mama is screaming for pilots right now. We need to get kids excited about becoming a pilot. I want to be a commercial airline pilot. These fools are literally paying for you to go to school. You do not have to drop a dime out of your pocket. All you have to do is say, I'm willing. And they
learn
will pay for you to go to school.
But all you
right.
have to do is learn how
they
to play
pay for you.
Simulator. How about they'll pay you to play flight simulator?
There you go. There you go. Give you
this
a pension.
How bad it got.
You,
said, but when we told this
dad.
World, America is the shit. America is where you come. There are people who still believe to come here if they want to be somebody. And we are begging
mm-hmm.
people to learn the buttons.
To learn the what?
And then we mad when other people come and learn the fucking buttons. They took our job. They took our button
right.
learning job. How? How?
Because everybody wanted to be a
job.
Everybody wanted to be a social worker.
We graduated people. Who, okay, so this is what I want to know. Because we're talking graduation and transition, right? Who's getting these graduates? Where are they going? What are they going to do? Like because like we just got through saying they're not
Atlanta?
Going into aviation. They're not going into aviation. They're not going to the railroad. Warren Buffett then told us. His youngest employee is 112 years old. They're not going into the railroad. They're not going into aviation. They're not going into shipping, export, and import. They're not at the docks. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of anybody graduating so they can go into import, export, even economists? No. Are they going in the law? Where are they going? Where are these people going? What are they going into?
That's a good question.
Well,
I think that
they know better not to go in that classroom with me. They know. They have seen the videos. Nobody's going into the fucking classroom. I can guarantee you that. Where are they going?
It's not a black hole. So, you know, they're not all being abducted. But I think a lot of them are trying their hand on their own. And then, you know, there's always the corporate structure, large companies, Coca-Cola, Marriott.
Banking?
Gas
or,
oil.
Banking,
gas oil.
Or
banking,
banking,
yeah, banking industry. Absolutely, banking industry.
Are people really interested in being what? Bank tellers or what? Investment?
No.
How is the banking? I guess I'm not.
I think it's more
operational, but
side.
I'm really interested in like where are most graduates? Are they going into? They're not going into teaching. You said social work. A lot of people are going.
No,
into
no. I was joking. I would say, you know, everybody can be a social worker, but
okay.
I think a lot of them are going into IT, you know, which is work from home jobs from whomever. So, you know.
Okay, so let's stop there, though, for
obviously.
Can you give me a favor?
Go ahead.
Just hold on. IT. What? Like app development or, like, building a website or data management?
I don't know. I haven't talked to the children. I have no idea what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? I know what my oldest decided to go into healthcare policy. So I know what he did.
Okay.
My two youngest, I don't know what the hell they're doing. They still trying to figure their lives out. But my oldest went into healthcare policy. From the kids that I know, a number of them have gone into IT. They've gone into cybersecurity. Some of them are working a corporate job while they're trying to develop their own thing on the side, be it an app or. A lot of them work for the Fed. A lot of them go into the Fed. They either go into the Fed directly or they're going to the Fed through contracts. They're contract. A lot of young folks are contracting. From my experience, a lot of young folks are contracting.
Mr. Rodney,
mm-hmm.
what did your granddaughter do? What industry did she choose?
Well, her major was in English, and there was something else. I forgot what the other piece was. But she did an internship with the NFL last summer.
Awesome.
And she wound up falling into agency. So she's going to be representing agents. Or excuse me,
contract
she's going to be
law.
An agent. Well, she's going to be an agent representing athletes.
Awesome.
That's so hard to define. Like, explain. So it's sports, but it's
but it's also
really
marketing. It's
marketing.
No, because it's
marketing.
It's
okay,
sales,
okay.
And then it's arbitration.
And that's legality.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you know, Lee, you had said something about somebody mentioned something about coding. Well, the thing about this AI, and I was hoping Thomas would stay on. The thing about AI is that even some of the technology jobs are going away with AI, you don't need to know how to code. You tell it what you want, and it'll build it for you. Even in app development, AI in seconds will build you an app. That's happening right now. So even some of the jobs in technology are going to go away because the AI is going to do it. We have to be prepared for that. You were talking about the warehouses having robots. Well, there used to be a time where you can always get, you know, manual labor in a warehouse, on a dock someplace. But because of COVID and some law changes, corporations moved up their date on integrating more technology.
Mm-hmm.
And because they've done that, I don't think we're prepared. But, you know, here's another issue, though, regardless of what that is. I went to do some stuff with some children, and I was really shocked at what the children didn't know.
Didn't know?
I was also shocked at the behavior of the children. So I went and talked to, I know quite a few educators, and here in the Clark County School District, I was talking to them, and I was asking them, so what's it like in the classroom? You know, I've heard anecdotal stories, but, you know, give it to me straight. I've heard Sister Rashi say it.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, they said, Rodney, we're in trouble. I said, what do you mean? They said, because a lot of the students barely know how to read, don't listen. They passed a law here that a student has to have contact with their parents. And in other words, where before, if the students had their cell phones out, the teachers could go, hey, put your cell phone away. If you don't put your cell phone away, I'm going to take your cell phone, I'm going to put it in my desk drawer, you get it at the end of the class. The law actually prevents from doing that now. And so if a student has his cell phone out, a teacher cannot even ask him, what is he doing with it, him or her. They can just play video games or be on Facebook or TikTok the whole class.
You better not touch their phone.
What are we, you know, what kind of product, and when I say product, what kind of students are we going to have? They even told me that, you know, a child gets 50%, they still pass them along. And I said, well, why do they pass them along?
30%. I just passed a kid with 30%, Mr. Rodney. She didn't come to school with 20, but a 30%. So she couldn't have done more than 30%, right? We just graduated her.
So now I'm not saying that child won't be successful because success can come a lot of ways. But what I am curious about is because this is the future. And if I were future, because you can see the future in your children, right? So if our future is undisciplined, unruly, unfocused, and is just being passed along in school, to the point where Sister Rashi says they graduate, will they even be able to do this technology? I mean, they can joysticks around, but when it goes beyond that to that computation thing that you were talking
analytics.
About, are they going to be able to do that? And I actually think that there's you know how they have that water hose and there's this big bubble in it and it's flowing?
Mm-hmm.
I see a bubble right now in education because that's our future. And if our children are unruly, undisciplined, unfocused, and they're actually not learning. Now, I won't know that until they graduate and they go to look for one of those jobs. But, heck, even joining the military today, you have to have some type of tech savvy. You have to be, you know, you have to be able to use the noodle. And what they're telling me is, nah, most of them, you know, I have middle school students, and they're not even reading at a third grade level. Well, if they're not reading at a third grade level in middle school, and here's the worst one, math. They said, nah, they might be at a third grade level in math. And I said, but doesn't math build on, you know, one thing onto the next? And I said, so if they didn't pass the first thing, then how could we even expect them to pass the second
the next
or the fifth thing?
That's right.
So
the
I'm
same
seeing
with
a potential
same with
crisis.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Rodney, can I tell you something? I told you earlier in our chat box that I needed to talk to you because I had to stand up, and I'm not big on hypocrisy. Whatever's real about me, I just go on and say it, you know, because if you can't be true, like, you're wasting time. Creating a fake facade is a waste of time. But what I was forced to do, forced, because it was explained to me that if I was able to teach a band of children for more than 4 months and I could not identify even one child, not one, who was able to receive the transmission of knowledge that I laid down and came away with more information after than before, then I was the problem. Did you hear me, Mr. Rodney?
Yep.
So they told me at the end of the year to find two students. Technically, they wanted four, two for the eighth grade, two for the seventh grade. Four students that I could say bought into the scientific process, tried to identify it, learned it, used it. You understand? Like that. And when I told them I was unable to find four out of 37 students, they said I had failed. I personally had failed. And I said, well, you cannot teach people who walk out, turn their back to you, put headphones and earbuds in, put their hood on and go to sleep, call their mama and tell on you. You cannot teach starving children, sleeping children, absent children, angry children. You cannot teach traumatized children, okay, who have not had a venue for therapy. You cannot teach children who have already found your very ability to stand in front of them as an affront. And so when I told them that what had happened was and that I couldn't find, but I couldn't, they looked at me real mean like I had did something wrong, and I falsified the closest I have ever come to cooking books. I've dug in my asshole and pulled out four students whose name I could call during the graduation ceremony. However, one of them does not read on grade level. And so what do you want? What would you suggest for an educator who has been put in a position from above, from administrators above, who said, oh, you taught these students from January, the end of January till the last of May, and you mean you were unable to make any academic strides with any of them? I don't know what to say.
So, Sister Rasha, you actually hitting on something that we have kicked this around for way too long without seriously addressing it. And our schools and our children and the politics of education is in crisis right now. And it's a part of, unfortunately, it's better to keep the people uneducated. Because if you keep people uneducated, you can tell them anything and they'll believe it. As we see with, heck, many of the things that's going on in society today because people don't know history. So because you don't know history, you have no safeguard, no buffer against some of the craziness that's happened before, because as I'm seeing it happen, I can go right back and say, hey, that's what they did here. That's what they did there. This is so-and-so. Oh, no, what he's telling me is a bunch of bovine defecation. But if people don't know these things, they cannot be on guard for these things. So I actually think that there's a concerted effort to keep us dumb. And it started out with to keep black people, but because there's some sympathetic white people, now the people that's in charge, they're happy with keeping everybody like that, because pretty soon they'll have machines and technology to do most of those things. Like we just mentioned, coding now. AI does coding. AI does apps. All you have to do is talk it into it. Heck, they were trying to figure out, could they determine whether a student wrote a paper or whether it came from AI? Well, that
could not.
So even going to school, because, heck, you know path of least resistance, right? And I'm one who don't like writing the API, whatever the heck it is, or APA structure. That was one of the worst things for me in school. I knew the stuff, but because they wanted me to put it in a particular structure, there's some things that I didn't do. Well, now with AI, and I do know it, I go pull up my chat bot, tell it, hey, give me a paper on blah, 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 using APA format, whatever the heck, and boom, there's my paper in seconds. Now, again, I'm not saying that people won't know, because I do know, but for the people who don't know it and use that, they just pass. That's education. One of the reasons why white supremacists are so focused on education is because if you muck it up now, that means the future for those people, for that group that they represent, is mucked up for a generation or more, usually two generations. It's hard to come back being two generations down. So black parents, black people, and black community, that includes black teachers, you know, the educators, even the administrators who push the educators to do some of these crazy things. It's our children's education, and it's their future that is closely tied to our future when we're older. And we need to wrap our arms around that. Stop seeing the teacher as the enemy, but the teacher has to stop seeing the parent as the enemy. And we have to also recognize that there are deficits in society. And Lee, you were joking about the social workers. That's actually one of the things we need more of, because of all of the craziness going on, all of the dysfunction. I was looking at the Cup Thomas's, Brother Barry's post, and basically he's talking about dysfunction. Well, that dysfunction begets more dysfunction. So you have to kind of cut it off where it is, like a cancer, and cut it out. And that might mean you have to let some people go. I was telling somebody, I said, you know, we spend an inordinate amount of energy in trying to save the almost unsavable. Maybe we need to adjust where we're putting our resources and build up the savable, build up the thriving. And unfortunately, and this may sound harsh, we may have to let some of the hardest cases go just to build us up. I mean, think about it as a gene pool. And again, this I can understand why some people might say this is harsh. But it's our future, right? Well, you want the strongest gene pool because, heck, first of all, that's nature. But you want the people who can think, who are physically fit, who are healthy. You know, if my daughter bring home somebody that's strung out, which I'm pretty confident she wouldn't, but just in case, if she brought somebody that was strung out, did not have his wits about him, had been smoking marijuana since he was 13, his brain cells are fried, memory gone, right? I'm not saying, oh, baby, because you love him, go with him. You messing up the gene pool. Our ancestors created this so that we could be who we were, not who we are now. And we need to go back to who we were, and then so we can leap forward to who we should be. And so, yes, I think we're going to have to make some tough decisions. We're going to have to send our children to those HBCUs en masse, and we need those of us who can need to get back involved with the schools and the school districts and the politics of schooling, because there's money there. And if there's money there, that means there's capitalism. And where there's capitalism, that means there's greed, and they're looking at cutting costs, don't care about the product. They just want butts in seats because that's how they get paid, and that's one of the reasons why charter and private schools are proliferating, because it's about the dollar.
And they hurt, too. We get kids all the time back into the district that came from the charter programs. Either they were taught immersion with different languages that are not spoken in the region or not in their family. So they didn't French immerse the child who don't even know what can you say bonjour. Or they have, you know, put these children in programs that they collect the money, but they don't have to be responsible, in my opinion, to DESE the way a fortified and affiliated bonded district does. And so I'm not interested in moving on to charter or even parochial for real private. I'm into education of the people, Rodney. What you have done is explain to me that true education must happen in the grand population. If you can pay to specialize your education, then it's already too late. What we need are people who can't pay to move to a specialized education to be still have access to information that will positively affect this nation. And it happens at the district level. It just doesn't happen when they can pay to play. And when I realized my homegirl said her son, and he dumped me. I mean, he's a precious child of God who has very slow processing. He don't fail. He don't fail. They have intervened on this nigga so bad that his bathroom breaks have an interventionist. But what they have done is paced him out to where he can't fail, and they pay for it. And so we can't pay for that on the district level. All we can do is bring, if we can, legally, which is a fight we undergoing now, the truth. And if you can just teach the truth at your school for the teachers out there, if you have access to the truth and you can teach it, you win and just stay. Because it's so many schools that don't let you say the true words, like you can't glorify Christopher Columbus. Christopher Columbus never made it to America. Why are we even doing that here? Like that. Yeah. Like if we are unable to show slave resistance in comparison to plantation profit, right? I don't know how to explain it exactly, Lee. You know what I'm talking about. But you should be able to teach the truth. And if you can teach the truth at your school and the books ain't been cooked, stay. You know what I'm saying? Just stay, because even for a decreased wage, it's more important to be able to teach the truth.
I think that what we need to do is push on local government and state government to do the right thing by all of our children. And that is simple. You have a budget. X amount of dollars is allocated to your education budget. X amount of dollars is divided equally by the students that you have in your district, period. I drove by a middle school the other day. This freaking middle school was cleaner, probably the same size, if not a little larger than my damn high school. And my high school was massive. It was a damn middle school, complete with a football stadium. Not a football field, a football stadium. I'm like, dang, dog, are you serious right now? Are you a middle school? Horrific. Horrific. It is the greatest injustice that we allow in our country. I don't care what zip code you live in. Each child is allotted the same amount of dollars no matter what district they reside in, period. Period. If your district has 1 million students And we calculate that out to $15.87 per student, and that's the money you get. If your district has 100,000 students, and it's the same count, it's $15.87 per student, that's how much money you get. Hey, dog, work it out. Work it out. That's how you work it. That's how you work it. It really is that simple.
People oftentimes take education to dollars and cents, and that's not really, in my experience, the key ingredient to the education of our children, of anybody's children. And so my niece, she graduated cum laude, She graduated cum laude. And I was very proud of her. And mm-hmm. they had a ceremony for the top 10% of the school. She wasn't in the top 10% though, but she graduated
right.
cum laude. And I was like,
right.
wait a minute. So then during the commencement, they started naming, you know, the students. And I kept hearing cum laude, magna cum laude, summa cum laude. And for a minute, we was like, well, dang, did half the school graduate with honors, high honors? And I'm still thinking about going back and looking at the video and counting to see, was it more than half that got these honor certificates? I think I told you my youngest daughter graduated, I think, earlier this year, last year. She was magna cum laude.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, these kids are smart. But here's the thing, though, Lee. I could predict that my niece was going to graduate high school. I could predict that my niece would graduate college as long as she had the money to attend. I could predict that. I could predict that my daughter was going to do it. As a matter of fact, it's not 100%, but you can pretty much predict what children are going to be successful in school. And the way that you predict that is it doesn't have anything to do with money. It doesn't have anything to do with technology. It's something very simple. Their home life. A child's home life is the greatest predictor of their success in school. Do they have a parent that is available, that is keeping them on task, that is encouraging them, that is giving them the extra help when they need it? Those are the greatest determinants of whether a child will be successful in school. You could take a school that's getting $6 per pupil and put it up against a school that's getting $15 per pupil. If that child has a positive home life, it's more likely that that child is getting, and I'm just throwing out numbers here just to show the variance, but it's more than likely that that child that has a better home life, even though they may be poor, but because their parent or parents are more involved, they're probably going to be successful. Now, there are some children that are just naturally gifted and they're going to do stuff, right? But that's a small percentage. In general, the children that are going to do best are the children that comes from the best homes. Now, there are some things that teachers can do to enhance that. There's things that teachers can do that can take a child that comes from a poor home, and they can be there for them as best as they can. But the reality is that child has to go back home, and they're going to spend more time at home than they're going to spend at school. And if time at home is where they're not able to get enough sleep, where they're not able to get enough to eat, where they're dodging bullets or dodging needles, right? If their parents are token up all the time and they're getting contact highs all night, that's impacting them. That's going to cause even more work for the teachers. And then if you don't give the teachers the support and the tools that they need, there's only so much they can do. They can do a lot, but there's only so much they can do. And what we ask of our teachers is to be superhuman. First of all, we're going to pay you a little. And then we're going to make you use some of that little that we pay you to
back into
buy supplies for your students.
Right?
That's crazy to me. So, and we are society now. We are the they. And so we and they have to get it together and say our there's a problem. When you another way to find out if there is a problem, if for whatever reason we don't want to believe the things that I'm saying now, is you go to your local college or university and ask them, how much preparation do you have to do for the recent high school graduates to take remedial classes before they get into the real rigor, just to get them prepared? Because we're graduating students. We just talked about students. They just get passed along. Well, if they get passed along, how the heck are they going to go to college? Not to mention, do you even want those children doing the trade?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to really, as a society, and so a society in general, but especially as black people, keep talking about this nation and nation. I had some folks tell me, they say, Rodney, every time we talk about having our own schools, we don't feel the support from you. And I said, it's not that I don't support us having our own schools, but what I don't believe in is that the same people who didn't do anything to make the learning environment better in the schools that we have are somehow going to flip the script. And when we get our own schools, they're suddenly going to become more attentive to their children, to their children. I said, I need some proof, and the proof for me is you make do with what you have first, because if I give you more and you know, when you do a lot with a little, that tells me you're prepared for more. But when you do less with a little, then I'm not thinking you're going to do more with more. That just doesn't compute to me. And we have to wrap our hands on it, because, yes, technology is moving forward. We are not moving forward. Sister Rocky just said that I didn't read.
What'd you say, Rocky?
And it's moving fast. The exponential,
yes.
Not forward, Mr. Rodney, exponentially forward. That's what people don't hear. Forward was 50s to 60s. Since 2000, Mr. Rodney, can you stream? Since 2000, Mr. Rodney, just think of all the new tech since 1999.
I'm thinking about the burger, the automated burger flippers in McDonald's. We used to always say, well, if push comes to shove, you can always get a job flipping burgers in McDonald's. You're not even able to get jobs. Those jobs are going away. Bartending jobs. Now, there's going to be specialties, but here in Las Vegas, bartending used to be huge. You didn't need a bunch of degrees, right? Well, now they have automatic drink makers.
Come on!
Plug it in, and here comes your drink.
You towel it in like a, come on, Mr. Rodney.
So we have to relook and rethink our future now. We're behind the eight ball, you know, as they say, as a negative thing. But we have to do, we still have time, but time is not on our side. We got to make it do what it do, and we have to make it do it now. And again, no more participation trophies, because when you just pass a student along from one grade to the next, you're giving them a participation trophy. Well, when that child meets the real world and he presents that participation trophy and that business or whatever it is rejects him or her, they're going to be looking back at us and saying, what the heck were you doing letting me just get participation trophies?
Mr. Rodney,
I have to be able to compete.
Well, I would say this. I was up at a reservation last year around Father's Day, and I saw that they still had full service gas stations, and the people would come out, pump your gas through your windshields or what have you. It's all about how much do you want to assimilate. And I keep on asking us every time: either we like white supremacy or we don't. That's a question that we have to ask ourselves. The ideas that we suffer from is that technology has always made it worse for us in this country. It has never been a help for our people.
Come on, there.
The other side of it is the assimilation piece in the education. You graduate cum laude, but of who? Amongst who? What were the requirements? If you're 32nd in education in all of the industrialized countries, does it really matter?
Wow.
Compared to who?
They don't like that part. They don't like that part, bro. You gave that number out.
When you get to challenging these things, we talk about pageantry. You know, let's not confuse goodness with greatness. They're enemies, good and greater enemies. They're not friends. So we have to ask ourselves once again, compared to who? Compared to what? Because we know they make it easy for their children. We know they make it easy for their children. And so when we ask our children to be amongst their children, yes, they may excel around their children, but their children ain't the smartest children in the world, period. And so we have to ask ourselves, when are we going to get back to building these institutions and these foundations? And listen, we don't have to have an automated burger flipper if we own the burger joints ourselves. 3 years after George Floyd, we still ain't even got the idea that the brother got killed because he went into a corner store that wasn't owned by us. There is no corner stores in that neighborhood where everybody has been sitting for the past 3 years to replace, to say, hey, if somebody else that looked like George comes in with a bogus $10 bill, he ain't going to get called on, the hit squad ain't going to be called on him to choke him out for 29 minutes. This is about institution building, and this is also about us doing exactly what our ancestors wanted us to do in 1865, get a moment to breathe and step away from them so we can become our own greatness. That is within our control. We talk about a lot of other things. And I'm not saying to be anti this country. I love this country. I was born in this country. I always team for Team U.S. I always cheer for Team USA. However, I would say inside of this country, we're not always treated the best, and we know this. But we're not always looking to put our best collective foot forward. And that's part of the problem. We don't have to live in the inner city. We don't have to champion the inner city. I was just talking to someone today about mental health, and I'm like, well, you know, in the suburbs is quiet, right? Well, yeah, because I can't shut down my thoughts. Brother Lee, you saw what we were talking about on the show today.
Yeah, I commented
on that. That sister could not get out of her own way. And I told her after we turned the cameras off, you listen to talk.
Yes,
you're not listening to what
yes,
folks are telling you.
Yes,
you know, you're not
did.
Listening to what folks are telling you. I everything that you're assuming, I didn't say that. I'm telling you something that's good for your own well-being because I, too, suffer from my brain being busy. I know what it's like, so that's why I live out in the burbs. When people say, why you live out in the burbs, it's better for me mentally. I don't have to hear the sirens all the time. I was shot twice when I was 18 and 19. I know what it's like to always look over your shoulder, right? Because I've been shot twice. So I understand these things, but I also know once I moved out away from everything where it's not, where the sounds are turned off at night and my mind can rest, I'm a better person for society. I'm less violent now. I don't have those rages of wanting to be violent. Seriously. I used to say all the time, like, man, why do I just see people and I just want to go up and do something to them? And that person, I don't even know this person. Why do I want to attack this person? Right? These are things that we have to deal with, but we have to understand some of these environments that we come from are just not good for us. And part of it is they are not supposed to be good for us. That's why they put us in those environments. We have to ask ourselves, how do we get out of it? So I hear everything Brother Rodney is saying about the future, AI and all of those things, but I was looking at that reservation, and I was like, well, look, there is a place where you got gas stations where you can actually pump the gas before you go in. Also, if you didn't want to do the full serve. They do all of this before you exchange cash on the Indian reservation. And I'm sitting there like, okay, so this whole idea of you don't have full service gas stations, that's a myth. They have them. It's all about does the community want it or not? Is the community trusting enough to say if Brother Lee pulls up, he can pump his gas and then go in to pay versus having to pay first and then pump his gas? You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's a level of trust they have amongst each other. And so we have to develop communities or get in control to where we can develop communities so we can have those things and own the burger joint so we ain't got to worry about AI. And one last piece, a white dude told me this 5 years ago. I was back home visiting. I was at Walmart. And, you know, that's when they first started the self-checkout lanes. And I was about to go into the lane, and he said, hey, don't go, hey, go to that lady.
Yep.
And he's like, because you got to think about it. If you keep going into the self-checkout lane, you're eliminating jobs. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that this white dude was probably one of those conservative, non-union type people. But he understood in Indiana where everybody was saying, oh, he must be a hick or a hillbilly or whatever. But he understood well enough to say, hey, bro, we all in this together. If you keep going to this animated line, you cut some jobs out. Go into the line with the cashier. And I tell you,
I want to jump.
If I'm not in an absolute rush, 90% of the time I go in those lanes where a cashier is.
I'm the same way, and I want to jump in on that because Rodney said something that I wanted to jump on, and you just built from that. Not only was it COVID, but it's a shift in the working culture and the working class. You know, I don't know what's going on with these young folks, but they don't want to work. They don't want to go to work and punch a clock. They want to do their own thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. But companies are – our economy is not built off of that concept. Our economy is built off of somebody going to get a check from somebody else, and they exchange that labor for that check, and that labor makes things or touches things or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Takes care of things, whatever the hell you want to do it, that labor does. But labor – the exchange of your work, the exchange of you getting your butt up, taking a shower, either when you wake up or the night before, it doesn't matter, whatever you choose to do, getting in your car, driving your car to a location to then swipe in, punch in, clock in, however you clock in, to start doing something is how our economy, is the way our economy is based. It's not based off you becoming an influencer and companies then turning around paying you to flash their product or get their product seen in front of you. It's not based off of that. It's not based off of you sitting at home trying to think of a way of to create the next video game. It's not based off of that. So companies are scrambling to find employees, and they're like, yo, these employees are becoming more and more unreliable. And since I can't rely on them, I got to go with the thing that I can rely on, which is machinery. We had that conversation about 2 months ago. My boss's boss and his boss and his boss came to our facility, and they were talking about automation. And this is something they were talking about 10, 15 years down the line. That shit ain't going to be no 10, 15 years down the line. They like, yo, next 3 to 5 years, you all be getting more and more and more automation. Because, unfortunately, and this is something that I've been training my staff to recognize, let's not set ourselves up for failure on a Monday. So we make a product, and if that product is to be made over the weekend, I have told them, do not set that shipment up for that product on a Monday. Set it up for Tuesday. Why? Because 9 times out of 10, mofos ain't coming to work over the weekend. They ain't coming to work over the weekend. They calling out big time. And let me tell you something. Ain't been a weekend I've been there where we have not talked on Monday morning. Yeah, we had call outs. We had to shut this down. We had to shut that down. Every Monday, same thing. But I ain't told y'all wrong yet. You know what I'm saying? But again, there's only but so long any business can operate with that tolerance. Eventually, they have to fix that. And the way they fix that is to take the humans out of the equation and put more automation in. Because guess what? Machines don't call out late. They don't call off sick. Ain't nobody getting pregnant. Ain't no machine knocking up nobody. Rashi, I apologize, but the truth is the truth. Machines don't have a cycle, a menstrual cycle. You know what I'm saying? Machines don't have car accidents.
No slip and falls.
It doesn't mean that they're perfect. No slip and falls, right.
No child support.
It doesn't mean they're perfect.
No child support.
There you go. No court dates for running a light. No court dates for getting into a fight. Doesn't mean they're perfect, but you can count on them more often than not. And they're running, their labor, because that's their running time, their labor, is more consistent than dealing with people.
You know what I'm saying? A machine child school ain't gonna call said machine. You know, baby calculator got into a fight. You need to come over here. And, you know, what's going on over here? That's not gonna happen. A machine isn't catching the coronavirus. That's not gonna happen. It may catch a virus, but it's not catching the coronavirus. You know what I'm saying? So, why would any company do that? Corporations are in the habit, in the business of making money. If they can make money with you, cool. If they can't, they will move in a different direction. We are moving in a different direction. And it like Rashi said, it's not happening step by step. It's happening in warp speed because you cannot afford to lose your customers because your people aren't conforming to the standards that you set up. And that's what again, it's out of tolerance. They are out of tolerance. And nobody can run with a variance that high forever. It's just not going to work. It's not going to happen.
Shit, I'm out.
You know,
that's
where we are right now.
I'm out of tolerance, man. I'm out of tolerance at this point with these folks, bro. Like, literally. I mean, listen, I understand the corporate bottom line because it's a lot when you got people, as Elon Musk said in a recent interview, the laptop class is what he called them. And he was like, listen, we fight with people to come into work. They don't even want to come in.
Yep.
And they're not productive.
Yep.
And then on top of that, they're throwing every mental health diagnosis on top of it. It's like, yo, how do you sustain when you don't want to work or you got every excuse not to work?
Oh, hold on. But hey, it's like what Stephen A. says about Kyrie when he said the Russians invaded Ukraine. He thought Kyrie was going to take off a mutt in order to get himself together. But it's the truth. It's the sad truth. So okay, so let's say you come to work. So now you come to work and you're treating work like they should be privileged that you showed up. So you got your phone in your hand all daggone day long. Again, not paying attention to the work you're supposed to be doing, so now you have problems. Again, you're out of tolerance. You're supposed to be, let's say you're that security guard. You're supposed to be making sure the store doesn't get robbed. Well, if you're in your phone all daggone day looking at TikTok, whomever's going to rob that store has been watching you long enough to know your patterns. So they know every day, 11:03, you hop on TikTok for 17 minutes. So they got 17 minutes to rob that store blind. They don't have to pull out a gun. They can steal. You ain't never going to see them. Why? Because you buried your head. And you know these folks, man. We're going to have so many.
The boss don't want to be there. Why do I want to be there if my boss don't want to be there, man? The client don't want to be there, man. The people you helping is mad that you made them come in. Everything is automated. You got to go online and do whatever that is. Do your banking online. Hell, your health is online. You go, you take the labs. They post the labs online. Everything's online. Shut up. Leave me alone.
I think HR is the first to go, to be honest with you, because you're right, Rashi. Everything you want from HR, we'll send you the website. Oh, you can go online.
You want to know your PTO, go online.
Then,
you want to know your benefits, go online.
Mad.
You want to get better benefits, go online.
Yeah, but then you mad because I didn't say something to you. Well, you should have talked to me. What the fuck? I need to talk to you every time I come to your ass. You telling me go to a website and go online. So what I need to talk to you about?
It's online.
Your whole life.
You want a man? You want a new man?
But I think that's part of and brother Rodney would probably say this more so him being older than us. I think that is our social.
Yeah, because you know he's old.
Well, I mean, you know, just being older. And
hey, man, y'all back up off
they,
my elder, man.
I think they experience a better quality of life. Brother Rodney, you still on?
I hope and pray you all live to be my age.
Oh, man, no doubt.
That's what I'm saying, man.
And I'm not dissing your age. Matter of fact, I'm kind of envious, right? Because for me, I was just on the phone with a brother of mine. We were talking about the new Color Purple movie. And I'm like, yo, that don't look like, you know, like, they don't look like black folks. Like, I feel
why
like.
Why do we need it?
We.
No.
Why?
No, say what you say, because you made the perfect thing. Do we need another Color Purple movie? No, we don't. Why? For what?
No, we.
But
yeah.
Hollywood has gotten lazy. Yo, it's a reboot of everything right now. Hollywood's gotten lazy. They want to go with whatever made them money because they broke. Because these streaming services are killing. They broke. So they trying to go with anything. They talking about a John Wick 5. How you going to do a John Wick 5, dog?
They on strike.
How you going to do a 5? Has everybody,
they on a
right has everyone seen John Wick 4? Has everyone seen
they
John Wick
4?
Has
strike,
anyone
bro.
Not? It don't matter. Okay, so, Rashi, have you seen John Wick 4?
Look, I seen them all, but y'all need to understand what's
okay,
about
on,
to happen.
Hold on. Rashi, let me finish my point. Thomas, did you see John Wick 4?
Of course, front center.
So how the hell are you going to make a 5 and he died in 4? How that works? Sorry, listeners, if you haven't seen it. But,
it's called a prequel.
Sorry for your luck.
It's called a prequel. It's called a prequel.
And you know what? But they're launching the Continental as a prequel. So John Wick 5 can't be a prequel. Now, the only thing that would make sense for John Wick 5, the best thing that would make sense for John Wick 5, real talk, is if they allow the brother to become John Wick.
Yeah, but
they
got the female that has her spinoff, though, the dancer.
Okay.
Right. So the only thing for a John Wick 5 movie that makes sense is they allow the brother to now become John Wick.
Or Jonah Wick.
No,
they're going to do flashbacks. They're going to do flashbacks, Lee.
That would just be stupid.
You know
the things that we didn't
that,
see.
Yo.
But, hey, Sister Rossi, you said something earlier. You said, well, they're on strike, or somebody said they're on strike. And I was like,
yeah,
but isn't one of the reasons why they're on strike is because of ChatGPT or whatever the heck it is? Because
exactly.
Now they're saying you can feed, I want to do a movie about this,
come
that,
on.
And the other. And you feed
on,
it Ryan, into
tell.
The chat box, and it comes out with a script. It does the writing for you.
Screen
you may go
play.
And do a little editing here or there, but it comes
come
out
on.
With it for you. So
and
how
what
that,
they do.
What's going to happen to the jobs of all of
that's
these
right.
writers, for that matter, all of these editors? So when we start the future, one thing we know for sure, you cannot hold back progress. But for so long, because it often comes down to dollars and cents. So I got a business over here. There's two businesses. One of them has high labor costs because it has a bunch of workers, right, which is typically the biggest cost for a business. This same business right next door is automated, right? So its cost is lower.
That New York just came
so
out.
So homeboy
too.
Over here with all of the labor, he has to charge to recoup his costs in labor. The business right next door that does the same thing doesn't have that labor cost, so he can charge less for his product. Well, people are paid so poorly now that everybody's always looking for, hey, I just need the lowest price possible. So what do? They go to the Walmart. They go to the lowest price that
hey,
they can
hey,
get.
Don't you talk about Wally World.
Hey,
don't be disrespectful.
Hey, I'm just saying what it is, though. Walmart put a lot of the mom-and-pop businesses and some of the even larger businesses out of business because they got their stuff made in China, cheap, blah, blah, blah. It cut down on their costs. And, yes, those automatic tellers, I'm with Thomas. Unless I'm in a super hurry and the line is real long, or usually – there's like one teller, they don't even have tellers in the banks here anymore, but there's just one person working the register and the line is like crazy. So
right.
But I need to get someplace. Yeah, I will go use the self-checkout, but most of the time I go wait in the line. But as I'm doing that, and as we look at Wally World over time, remember when they used to have a whole bunch of cash registers open with actually people on it? And now it's like maybe two or three at the most, and you have all of the self-checkouts and the people are flowing through. That's progress, and people are going to continue to do that. So yeah, I'm doing my own little protest of using those cashiers, but ultimately there will be fewer and fewer cashiers to use, and time is of the essence. And yes, if you need to save every penny, you're going to go to the places to save pennies. So the automatic burger place, saving a bunch of money that can sell their product for a few pennies less, maybe that's where the people are going to go, because hey, we all know that Beta was better than VHS, but VHS was cheaper, and it lasted a little longer, and Beta went out of business except for professional production, right? Because people wanted the least expensive, just like the path of least resistance. That is
but
nature.
Isn't it a setup, though? Isn't that a setup, though? Because, like you said, we need to go to the places that are least expensive because we get paid so poorly. But there's a correlation between that and health issues and then rising health costs, not having enough beds. It just goes on and on and on and on. So, again, I say the war on work and the working class is real. Like, yo, the fact that we had a huge fight, the fact that we had a national discussion about the potential of paying people $15 an hour was ridiculous. But if you notice, ever since that happened, you go to McDonald's now, right? And I said this a couple weeks ago. Did I not? You go to McDonald's now, and a freaking meal at McDonald's is costing you relatively the same if you were to go to Golden Corral and you can eat a smorgasbord. It's relatively the same amount of cost. That is ridiculous. That you are now paying upwards of $10-$12 for a fast food meal when you can go and sit at, again, a quote unquote family centered restaurant where you can have what we consider, because I'm not sure, I can't speak the way they get the stuff from, but fresh vegetables, actual fruit, actual meats. You know what I'm saying? You get all of these options for $3 or $4 more than you were if you ran through the damn drive-thru at McDonald's. And Lord forbid you try to go to Wendy's, because Wendy's, I swear for Lord, every time you go in there, you got to give away your first kid. Wendy's expensive as hell. Wendy's is on the level of a Five Guys, a Shake Shack.
Yeah, Five Guys.
Oh, my God. It's like $20 to eat a freaking Wendy's.
They say,
a daggone combo.
We don't do
Wendy's
Five Guys,
like
right? You're supposed to put everything on that cheeseburger and then put it off in a box on the side later for stuff you use later. Five Guys charge you for everything. But we just don't want all that shit
ridiculous.
On our burger. One of the things we were talking about here is transition, though. Because there's a lot that used to be that is no more.
Absolutely.
How we get to and fro. We used to have to either hop on public transportation or have our own shit. Now we can call somebody. We call somebody and they come pick us up and they ride for a couple of dollars. And what has that done to the taxi industry? Which was, by the way, one of a popular black industry. The taxi industry was one, because we couldn't ride comfortably, safely on all public transportation, and we couldn't afford our own ride. So the taxi service was a godsend for the black American population. But now, rando rides, you know, whoever got a car with a proper registration, nothing to do, they can come pick you up like a, you know, serial killer or not and take you where you got to go. Have a nice day. Thank you. And so what is the new transition with food, right? Old food used to be you had people you went to regularly. It was Danny's and Manny's and Linda's and Sylvia's and what they would, you know, the Silvano, but whoever it was, they were, in fact, in Kansas City, it's the Gateses or whatever. It was a family industry that you had agreed to invest in. They modified their menu for you. They provided food from various cultures for you. Now, then we moved on to fast food, right? And now we don't even want to go to the store. We just tell them to send it to us. The dude who was going to take us to the restaurant, now we send him to the restaurant to get the damn food and bring it to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't even want to go there no more. We don't want to go there. Well, we used to be American entertainment culture, Mr. Rodney. If you could get to the theater, if your people had theater money, holy shit, you was a baller, right, Mr. Rodney? Even when they were sitting us in the balcony, you was a baller.
Hey, I remember when the movie theater was still segregated, and that's exactly what we had to do. We had to go straight to the balcony and sit usually towards the back to watch the show. But Sister Rasha, you and Lee hit on something though that we also have to address is, and I fall for it too. I'm more apt to order something from Amazon than I am to go to the store because I don't want to be around people coughing and hacking all over the place and acting like COVID's not real, right? So I order a lot of my stuff now. What I need is quicker. Sometimes, you know, it's saving me gas. It saves me time. And it comes right to my door the next day or usually within 3 days. So the convenience is there. But you all talked about, somebody said something about people don't want to work in the office anymore. Well, one of the issues that is having is people are in isolation. So you live mm-hmm. by yourself because that's what we do as Americans now, which is already problematic, but we're living by ourselves. Our socialization has become work. Well, now that a lot of people are not coming back to work after COVID, and oh, by the way, some corporations realize, wait a minute, why am I renting all of this office space out when I can still have the same employee at home with a computer, a camera, right, and a phone doing the same work? And it's costed, and I can pay them the same thing, but I don't have the overhead. My bottom line just increased, right?
Yep.
So this work from home and with the Zennials pushing for it even more, and I understand it. Heck, if I could get a job where I could work from home, I might do it too. But you look at that, and you look at the time, you look at the reduced carbon footprint, so there are some advantages, right? But the Surgeon General said that isolation was the equivalent of smoking cigarettes now. You're looking at people who have more anxiety, you know, they're stressed out. You have more depression, especially in our sisters, but it's actually happening to everybody, and it's happening mm-hmm. to black people more and more. Isolation is not good, and technology is creating more isolation. Now, I don't know if doing a Zoom call has the same impact of being face-to-face with somebody. I mean, I like Zoom, and I like the phone and stuff sometimes, but there's sometimes where I want to press the flesh. I want to be with the person or person. When we do the gathering, I think I told you guys that when we first started, I didn't plan on doing the gathering on Black Friday, not because I was planning on shopping, but I thought that people were eating leftovers and hanging out with their family until I realized a lot of people didn't have their families near them. And so the gathering had became their sort of alternate family, their family away from family. And that's literally mm-hmm. how we started doing it on Black Friday, was because so many people were in isolation. And they said, hey, man, this is the only family I get is when I come to the gathering on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. Otherwise, I'm home sitting depressed because I'm eating a Cornish hen instead of having a turkey with the family. So we have to look at that because that is causing issues. Now, I don't think it's going to slow down technology, but I do think we have to be more purposeful in how do we have – when Brother Barry comes out here to Vegas, I love seeing the brother. I get to hear him on the radio like we're doing right now. You know, I get to see him in his videos, and I do watch your videos, brother. And I, you know, I tell people about Brother Barry. But when he's out here, though,
he don't tell nobody about
Lee,
me.
When you're no Lee, because you come out here more, so they think you live here. But
you didn't have to bring that up.
but But when I go to a black restaurant and I say, oh yeah, this is my homie from Minnesota, or this is my homie from B-more, now Charlotte, right? When I can say that, that makes them smile because, oh, Rodney, you brought somebody from out of town here. This is money I wouldn't have otherwise had. Thank you so much, Rodney. You know, I'm just trying to support my people. But it's that interaction that we need. And technology is going to advance. And Sister Rossi said warp speed, it is picking up the pace. We're going to have to figure out how do we keep ourselves human and give ourselves the things that we need so the technology isn't killing us. It's not making us mentally ill.
Mr. Ross, you guys have brought up everything except one thing. I was waiting on you guys to say one factor in all of this. And it's just pretty much CEO pay. The CEOs need to make less. And because Americans have ambitions, everybody thinks that they're their own CEO, it never was that way before, where everybody thought they were their own CEO. People don't look at the CEO pay, which drives up the price of goods and service. And the CEOs aren't doing much for a lot of these corporations. In some cases, they're driving them into the ground. And so they leave with their parachutes, and then the cost goes up even more because the company has to recoup, or the corporation has to recoup what the CEO messed over. So I think that that's one of the biggest reasons why we have an influx in inflation and prices in the United States. And we don't have a Congress or a Senate that's willing to pass bills to actually put measures in to say that a CEO can only make so much more than percentage-wise than their employees collectively. Because I think if that was in the place as well, we wouldn't see a level of goods going up. Secondly, if technology is going to be the way, then if you're not paying people and you don't have medical costs and you don't have all of these other things, we should see the price of goods go down. But if you don't have that leveling of the CEOs where they're not being able to make an absorbent amount of money, what we're going to find ourselves with is the prices are going to go up. They're going to say, well, this is the cost of work. This is the cost of maintenance for the machine now, right? Now you got to pay more for the maintenance of the machine, but you don't have a human element that had all of these other things that are going that were supposed to be happening, that they were covering in cost. So I just think that we have to really ask ourselves, and Rodney says this all the time, you know, people get the government they deserve. But we have to ask ourselves with all of the other things that we talk about and distractions and the inflations, why don't we talk about CEO's pay? Why do we glamorize it? And I think that's part of the Trumpism thing, too. If everybody feels like they're a boss. And listen, a lot of folks don't even know what it takes to be a boss. First thing is sacrifice. If you won't sacrifice things in your average everyday life for yourself, you really ain't a boss to someone else. Like, because bosses are typically, when they're building something, they're the last to get paid. If you're a person that's first to eat, the first to pay yourself, you're not a boss. You're an employee. You think about yourself and only you, right? So we have to really understand that it's like a level of thinking and policy, because the oligarchs, and as much as we talk about technology, you know, the oligarchs are still going to be on top with all of this technology. They be different faces, but I've just seen Elon Musk and some of these other billionaires ask for the automation piece to slow down, because they're worried about, hey, if we put all these people off a job, the country could erupt into another civil war between the haves and the have-nots.
And the have-nots. That's the part I was going to drive down to, because I've said this on the show. I said we are moving toward a society in which governmental welfare has to become the norm, because you're not going to have enough industry for people to get jobs and survive. If not, it's going to be chaos. So we're either moving toward a lifestyle, a norm in which, you know, Rodney, you and I love sci-fi, so more like Star Trek, to be honest with you, where, you know, money is a thing of the past. We have to. It has to be one or the other. Because if we don't move toward that, then it's going to be chaos. It's literally going to be chaos, because you're going to have more people out of work, not able to find work, period, because there's nothing for them to do, because the machines are doing the bulk of it or at all. But these people still need to eat.
They still need to be housed. They still need to be clothed. They still need to take care of their family. So somebody don't have to give up something.
So, Lee, you make
Movie
a good
Saint
point. Rush. And you tech futurists in the 60s when I was a little boy had predicted what you're talking about. But what they predicted, and I shared this on the show as well, is that we could no longer sustain a five-day work week. That
Correct.
We were going to have
Correct.
To reduce the work week because there's just not enough work. But one of the other things that they predicted, and it's just kind of like Star Trek because, you know, they get credits, right? But one of the other things they predicted was that we were going to be so productive, which has actually come to pass, that we were going to be so productive that literally there just wouldn't be enough work for the working people of working age. So if there's not enough work for people of working age, but yet people still have to get funds for goods and services, products, then how do you do that? And I think it was Andrew Yang that talked about the universal income. I think that's what it was called. And that's something that futurists said we were going to have I don't think they call it universal income. They called it something else back then, but ultimately that's what it comes out to. And they said you're going to have a means to pay people not to work because there won't be enough work, but we'll be productive enough. And everything that they said so far has come to pass except for one thing, and that was, and Thomas hit on this, that was the sharing of the wealth from that improved productivity. In other words, if you look at the salary of an employee in the 50s, which was kind of like the golden years for the middle class, if you look at the difference between a person in the 50s and a person today, you see that people today are actually getting paid less money. But you also see that the CEOs, the owners, are getting the lion's share of that money, and they're literally taking money out of society. Well, if that money isn't in the pool for other people to get, obviously they cannot get it. And so it's accelerating the difficulty for jobs, for people to have those jobs. Then you compound that with America is getting older and we're not producing enough children, so that we won't have enough children to fit the jobs that are there, which will push technology even further, because if a corporation needs people to work a job and the people aren't available, then they're going to come up with some type of technological advancement to fill in that void. So ultimately, we're talking about the future now and our children today, we have to look at what needs to be done to ensure that they can have health care, because obviously most health care comes from your employer, and if you're not employed, you typically have no health care, or you get bottom-of-the-barrel health care, and that's not good for society. This upends the free market lie of capitalism. It simply does not work, cannot work, will consume itself, and like our actual economic system has always been a combination of capitalism and socialism. We're going to have to see that socialism part play a larger role, or we simply will not be able to sustain ourselves.
No, I concur, and I would tell you those things are all doable, but Brother Rodney, that's part of my case when we talk about reparations. These are some of the things that I always hit on in my talking points when I'm talking to conservatives, is that rich people don't put money back into the economy. They take the money, the money sits off.
Yep.
You know, that money does not come back into this economy. If the conversation, the comeback is always, well, all you guys are going to do is buy Cadillacs, trucks. That sounds like American jobs to me. We're going to buy TVs? That means somebody got to be at Walmart to sell the TVs and Best Buy, right? Okay, somebody got to make the cars. Okay, what else? Clothes? Yep, okay, cool. So somebody got to sell the clothes to it too, right? So we create jobs now. Now you're talking about a job creator. Because a job creator for here, and you're going to take people off the amphib roles, you spent $13 trillion in Iraq. What's the problem? What are we talking about? That didn't create jobs here. That's not in an economy here. So that's part of what we have to talk about. And we have to get wiser as a people to understand some of the points that you touched on, brother, is the isolation kit. I want to say this to the listeners who are black women. And I've been saying this on this show, and I've been saying it on the show here locally. Sisters, you can't do it all by yourself. I know you guys have, I know you all been through a lot, but, you know, in this life, we all been through a lot. The idea of cancer, to me, hitting black women the way they do is because sisters are stressed out, they're tired, they can't do it all by themselves. The body, the mind, combining together is literally shutting down on you, and it's cancerous. It's cancerous. Mothers have, we have heart attacks. That's our thing. Cancer is your thing. And I'm telling you, the idea of doing it by yourself, being isolated, them constantly pumping this strong black woman idea is literally killing you. And the ideology that some of you hold on to that makes you want to be isolated because you feel like you're being safe is harming you. And they don't want to tell you this because it makes money for them on the pharmaceutical side, in the medical industry side, in the therapeutic side of things. You know, we never needed as much therapy as we need today because we were typically communal people. We were typically around our family, our friends, and our community. So when we had an issue, we could talk to someone. Siri ain't the person you need to be going to, and even the people on Facebook, Instagram, or what have you. So if you can get anything out of this conversation today, is that we have to depend on each other. And I will tell you, humans, in my humble opinion, are a lot more accountable than some AI software that can't deal with human emotions and intelligence.
Yeah, we got 3 minutes left in the show. Rodney, last words.
HBCUs. Really consider preparing your children for the rigor of HBCUs because it's difficult to get into them. But when your child will be better off going to a Howard, a Spelman, or a Morehouse than going to a Yale or a Harvard. And if they're black, which is who we're talking about here, they're more likely to get recruited by those larger corporations if that's your goal. And yes, I need people to do my yard. I need somebody to fix my car. I need a plumber. I need an electrician. It would be nice to pick up the phone and call a black person for a change.
I would like to let everyone know that just this week we celebrated African Liberation Day. This is a day created by Malcolm X on his pilgrimage to Africa, where he discussed what it would take for Pan-Africanists to shift the world paradigm from economics and health, education, law, reproduction, and the whole nine. And I just need everyone to know that May 25th is World African, and that's Pan-African, all the Africans found on the earth, Liberation Day. And it is our day to contemplate reclaiming our natural resources, re-educating ourselves for long-term liberation, and identifying ourselves with our brothers and sisters who are starving, absolutely, not figuratively, starving to death right now somewhere on this planet while we throwing away food. And I just want to make sure that we understand that African Liberation Day and Memorial Day, where we discuss the sacrifices and the deaths of those who have gone on to pave the way for us in our ancestry. Make sure that we are understanding that.
Brother Barry?
Man, the only thing I got to say, 12 Watch is coming. I'm happy with our new prototype, and that I want to thank my team and all of the people that I'm handing out. I made a mission that I'm going to take 20 people in the next 5 years and we'll make a millionaires, and I'm sticking to it. And so I look forward to working with this team. You guys will see us in Vegas. You'll see us out in other places, and we're coming.
All right, well, for the last 30 seconds or so, we'll take a moment of silence for those whom have given the ultimate sacrifice for the preservation of this country.
Family, thank you. We love you in advance. Anything you can do about it until next week.